La Ruby Productions presents The Great Unlearning, a courageous memoir about one woman's bold journey to mend her broken past. Read by me, the author, Mary Law. In the last episode, I read The Calling, a story about my search for independence by running away from California to Hawaii at 19 to escape my chaotic teenage life and leave my reputation behind, but was living proof that wherever you go, there you are. Discos on the beach were my new playgrounds, but proved to be a bad influence on me. I found a great job, but quit it to move in with a cocaine dealer, strapped a gun to my ankle that I didn't know how to use, got arrested, and impulsively married a man that wasn't suited for me. Was I a confident risk taker or just ignorant of what could go wrong? In today's episode, I will read the next story in the book titled Me Too. It's a little shorter than the others, but packs a wallop. Here is Me Too. During a euphoric ride on my turquoise green Bianchi road bike, flying down Kalaniana'ole Highway on the island of Oahu, I couldn't tell if my tires were actually touching the road. Feeling high on life, invincible, and incredibly grateful for my strong athletic body, I was testing out a new black and red one-piece tri-suit that looked like one of those conservative onesie bathing suits women wore in the 1920s, and which was remarkably comfortable to swim, bike, and run in. As I kept pace with traffic on parts of that fantastic stretch of highway, the wind at my back, I was heading for Kapi'olani Park and the finish line to the half Ironman I was training for. Thriving in triathlon and marathon competition, as well as university lifestyle, I was the happiest I'd been in years. Nothing pleased me more than studying on the beach after runs, long bike rides, and swims. This was before marriage and children, when I was in school full-time, had a glorious training schedule, and worked as a cocktail waitress in a hopping disco at night. At 24, life was grand. Near the end of my magnificent 25-mile ride along that breathtaking stretch of Hawaiian coastline, I noticed a blue compact Toyota alongside me and could hear and feel burning down the house by the talking heads blaring through its closed windows. Four boisterous boys in the car were laughing and carrying on as cans of Budweiser beer sloshed all over them. My first thought was the hope that they would make it to wherever they were going without hurting themselves or other people. But as one of the boys in the back seat rolled his window down and shouted, "Hey, baby, want to sit on my face?" and the other three laughed hysterically, I let out a huff of disgust. Keeping my eyes on the road while clipping along at 20 miles an hour, although the other traffic was speeding up, the blue Toyota maintained its pace with me, which enabled the drunk boy in the front passenger seat to lean out the window just far enough to reach me. As the others in the car cheered on this floundering boy, the driver swerved into the bike lane and took his right hand off the steering wheel in order to hold on to the idiot boy's left leg so he wouldn't fall out of the car. The idiot then grabbed my breasts with both hands, squeezed them hard, and refused to let go as the other boys ramped up their drunken shouts of approval. Sobbing and making unrecognizable sounds, I stopped pedaling, but continued to be pulled along by the moving car. As I gripped the handlebars with all my might and avoided crashing by not braking, I had to endure being dragged by my breasts as the other cars whizzed by. When the boy decided it was over and finally let go, I screamed and cursed while he and his friends shrieked with laughter as their car sped ahead, swerving almost out of control. After hitting the brakes so hard I almost toppled over the front of my bike, I was able to make out the license plate number through tears of rage and humiliation. I managed to call the police from a phone booth at a gas station across the street. Incomprehensible, even to myself, and so nauseated I thought I would throw up on my new biking shoes. When a beefy police officer arrived after 20 minutes, I had just stopped shaking violently, freezing cold despite standing in the warm Hawaiian sun. Speaking to me in a condescending voice as if I was a helpless airhead, he said the car was a rental, the boys were tourists, and it could be difficult to track them down. After I made one final complaint, the police officer said something to me that changed my life forever. As he slowly looked me up and down, gazed at my chest, and spoke directly to my breasts, he said, "What did you expect? Look what you are wearing." Feeling totally violated again, my shoulders hunched forward as my chest caved into my body, a position in which it would remain for many years to come. Was he right that I deserved it? Was it my fault? I felt shame for what he said and for not speaking up for myself. I don't remember what happened next, but somehow got myself back onto my bike and rode home. It was only recently that I heard a reflection on this story from a friend that I wish I could have received back then. She said, "Your courage and instincts to stop pedaling and go with it for your safety was a fierce act of self-love." But because I didn't hear that from anyone all those years ago, it felt like my body only attracted trouble, and men were not to be trusted. To this day, I am uncomfortable wearing tight clothing in public and don't want to draw unwanted attention to myself, especially my breasts. And while many men have told me to flaunt it while I've got it, instead I tend to dress more like a librarian. Although I slowly unlearned the devastating effects of this experience by eventually surrounding myself with people, including men, who actually value and appreciate women, it took decades to find myself in such a crowd. Now, with the creation of this book, I'm letting every bit of me be seen. I understand why women don't want to speak out about sexual harassment or assaults. It's humiliating and can be quite risky. Victims don't want to be perceived as victims. There's fear of not being believed, a risk of retaliation from the perpetrator, fear of being perceived as an attention seeker, and there is a significant risk of victim blaming, which I have experienced. For instance, I was a recipient of victim blaming when that police officer said, "What did you expect? Look what you're wearing." When I was raped at 16, I experienced victim blaming with comments like, "Why didn't you run away or fight back? Were you drinking alcohol at the time? Did you lead him on? You should have been more careful." Being silent about my sexual assault only compounded the emotional and psychological aftermath from the violations to my body and spirit. I had uncomfortable flashbacks, experienced emotional outbursts and anger, often felt moody, irritable, and anxious. When I took the first healing step to speak up, I started the healing journey of overcoming shame, guilt, fear of judgment, and rejection. There was power in breaking my silence, even though it was painful and emotionally draining. But by sharing my stories, I started growing my self-worth into an unshakable force. The most empowering and monumental steps to my healing was to write about them for this book. It is my sincere hope that my stories help other women to come forward about their sexual assaults and begin or find themselves further along their healing journey. If you'd like to see the self-portrait I created to accompany the story I read today, you'll find it on my blog at mary-law.com. Or better yet, while you are on my website, buy a copy of The Great Unlearning. There are over 50 surreal self-portraits and stories in there. Visit mary-law.com. If you purchase a book via my website, I will send you an autographed copy while they last, or you can buy it on Amazon. Now it's time to address a listener's question. Katie, a listener from Chicago, asks, "Why is your face not visible in most of your photos?" That is a great question, Katie. I'm not hiding, but it definitely serves the introvert in me. Leaving my face a mystery is a way I engage and connect with my viewing audience. That sounds kind of weird because the first place we look in a photograph is the face and eyes, searching for an emotion that typically sets the tone for the photograph. A sad face means a sad story, and if someone is smiling, all is good. We also compare ourselves to other people's faces and create instant judgment about who the person is and how fortunate or unfortunate their lives must be. If my face were in all of my portraits, they would simply be photographs of me. But if my face isn't shown, the photograph is more about the person looking at it. In my faceless self-portraits, I want the viewer to focus attention on other elements of the photograph and place themselves where I sit or stand in the photograph. I read somewhere that anonymity equals interpretation. So in a faceless portrait, the viewer can fill in the blanks with their own interpretation of the story of the photograph. I want my viewers to see other elements of the photograph that tell my stories, like my clothing, posture, the movement of my body and hair, the environment, the emotion in my hands, and with the symbolism I use in most photos. I'm looking around my little studio space right now and I see self-portraits hanging on my walls with ravens, crows, eagles, padlocks with keys, a pomegranate, rope, and books. These birds and objects add to the emotion in the story. I've anonymously hung out in galleries where my self-portraits have been featured and listened to what people had to say about them. My intent for a self-portrait can be completely different than the interpretation from a viewer. For instance, in the self-portrait titled Go Ask Your Mother, which accompanies the story in The Great Unlearning about being raped in an orchard at 16, was purchased by a woman because the image reminded her of the playfulness of her youth. She didn't know the image was created for a rape story. You can find that photograph on my blog by visiting mary-law.com. It was posted on November 3rd, 2022. I also recorded Go Ask Your Mother for my podcast on the same day. If you have a question or comment about a story or my art, please email me at mary@mary-law.com. There's a good chance I'll mention your comment or address your question in a future podcast. If you have a question or comment about a story or my art, please email me at mary@mary-law.com. There's a good chance I'll mention your comment or address your question in a future podcast. My website and email address are also in the show notes. And I have a free gift for you. By signing up for my engaging newsletter with inspiring new content, information on upcoming events and future projects, you will receive the audio version of my book of poetry, Fear Means Go, read by me. I also play classical guitar on this recording, as I did for today's podcast. In the next episode, I will read the next story in the book titled Murmuration, where I will share why it was no mistake that I ventured into a hospital as part of my undergraduate pre-med training. All it took was one unprecedented morning in the emergency room that put me on a life-saving path to personal inquiry, unlearning, and healing of my childhood wounding. This is Mary Law. Thanks for listening.